Hello and welcome back to PaleoCast. I'm Dave Marshall.
And I'm Liz Martin.
And yes, we have Liz Martin back from Japan. How was your trip?
It was good. It was a lot of fun, but it's nice to be back.
And how's the thesis writing going? Because that was why you were there, wasn't it?
Yeah. So thesis writing actually went really well. Apparently being completely isolated for 3 months with nothing else to do gets a lot of writing done. So yeah. Hopefully in the next couple of weeks I'll submit, hoping either next week or the week after. So,
have you still got lots to do?
I'm just kind of waiting on comments on a few final chapters, and the rest of it's basically all done. So I don't have too much depending on comments.
You're in a good place then. I remember for my MSc, I was in that place kind of like with 5 minutes before the deadline.
Yeah, I don't have like a strict deadline. The deadline currently is that I already have a Viva date, and so I need to submit enough time before that so I can make the Viva date. And I don't know what that actual strict deadline is, but I'm aiming for 6 weeks.
Well, good luck in getting that in. But even though you're writing up, you still managed to find time to record an interview whilst out in Japan. So can you tell us what we're going to be hearing about today?
Yeah, so I went to the National Museum of Nature and Science and met up with the head of collections there. And basically what this episode is about is going through the Japan Gallery. So it's kind of a brief introduction to paleontology in Japan. And it's a little bit different than usual episodes, I guess, because we're actually walking through the gallery, which was a lot of fun, but as you'll hear, caused a few problems with noise.
Why? What was happening?
So I went on Monday, which is actually the day that they're closed to the public. So we thought that would be perfect because there wouldn't be people around. Unfortunately, because it's close to the public, that's also the day that they do a lot of work in the museum. So there's a little bit of banging and stuff as they were actually dismantling an exhibit below us, which we didn't know was going to be happening. So
typical.
Unfortunately, there's a little bit of background noise at times, but I think it's okay.
Yeah, it doesn't go on for the whole episode. So there's just a bit like a third of the way in. So stick with it. It's not too bad.
Yeah.
But so what we've got is kind of like, one of those audio guided tours that you can get at the reception of some museums. Is that kind of what we've got?
Yeah, it's a little bit like that. It's kind of starting at the earliest fossil ever found in Japan and going all the way through to kind of modern cave deposits. So it's walking as a sort of guided tour through the exhibit, learning about all the different kinds of fossils you can find in Japan.
Yeah, it's a really nice change in terms of format, and I think it works quite well. So please let us know what you think and if you'd like any more of this kind of stuff.
And speaking of what you guys think about us and how you feel about the show, the podcast awards show is coming up again, and it's got a bit of a new format. Can you talk a little bit about that, Dave, and tell us about the new format?
Okay, so every year we've been asking you guys to effectively vote for us for the podcast awards show. It's like the podcast Oscars, if you will. And this year it's a little bit different, and it really shifts things in towards our favour. So before, you used to have a public vote, and the public just voted for which their favourite podcasts were, and that one won. It was pretty simple. But it did weigh the awards in favour of those shows with the biggest audiences. So if we were doing something like cryptozoology or aliens or something, then those kind of shows would normally win. However, this time what's happening is that we have the public vote as usual, and then all of the shows that get shortlisted then go on to be properly judged by a panel of judges for their content. So it's not just purely about who has the most fans, it's about who delivers the best show. And of course that'll be us, won't it? So if you could vote for us, that'll be on podcastsawards.com. And all the registration details will be on there. And the public voting is open for the entire month of July. So please make sure you get there and vote PaleoCast. And I think we'll be going for the education category again.
Sounds good. Sounds like a good new format.
2017 is our year.
Yeah. Ooh, go PaleoCast.
And as always, please like, share, and subscribe this episode if you've enjoyed it. And please get in touch to let us know what you thought of it and if you have any episode requests.
And I hope you enjoy this episode with Dr. Makoto Manabe. I'm currently at the National Museum of Nature and Science in Tokyo, and I am speaking with the Director of Collections, Dr. Makoto Manabe. Thank you for joining me today, Makoto.
Thank you, and my pleasure.
So we are currently in the Japan Gallery, and we're going to talk a little bit about the history of Japan and paleontology in Japan. So if we can start out with you introducing yourself and telling me a bit about your background and how you got here.
Okay, I was born in Tokyo and raised in Tokyo area, pretty much. I did my MSc at Yale, New Haven, Connecticut, and PhD at University of Bristol, UK. My PhD thesis was ichthyosaurus and aquatic adaptation. And I finished that in 1994, and I was lucky enough to get a job here at the museum right away. So I've been curators of fossil reptiles and birds here at the museum for many years. And starting last year, I got a new job, which is director of collections. And it means everything beyond geology. So I have to know a little bit about zoology and botany and physical anthropology and history science. So I have to deal with trains and automobiles and airplanes and rockets and things like that.
So quite different from most paleontology curators.
Yes.
So I guess one of the reasons that I really wanted to talk to you about kind of paleontology in Japan is that most people, I don't think, recognize how much paleontology there is in Japan and don't really understand sort of the background. So can you talk a little bit about kind of the geological history of Japan and how it became this archipelago today?
When I was doing graduate studies in US or UK, many people said, I thought Japan was entirely volcanic. And are there any fossils? And yes, there are. And there are volcanic igneous rocks, but there are quite a few sedimentary rocks. And Japan was not archipelago islands until mid-Miocene.
Okay.
And before that, Japan was a part of Asian continent. So Japan was as if at the edge of the big Asian continent. So most of the area facing to the Pacific today, it's so eastern part is very marine sediments. And if you go to towards China and Korea, they're a bit a little bit of non-marine sediments. And the oldest fossils to date in Japan is Old Bishan, and it's a conodont, so obviously marine area. And on top of that, trilobites and corals and brachiopods. And so it's quite a variety of fossils here, and starting from Old Bishan and onwards.
So do these marine fossils occur all over the country, or are they mostly in one area?
Yeah, it's a good Paleozoic fossils are coming from northern Honshu. It's a Japan, as if you look at the map, it's a Hokkaido is big northern island, and mainland Honshu is sort of long island from north to south, and Shikoku is small island, and the Kyushu is a southern island. So four major islands. But Honshu is main elongated island, and the northern Honshu and the eastern side is where most of the Paleozoic fossils are.
Okay. And
obviously I'm looking at a lot of trilobite fossils and various kind of coral marine fossils. Mm-hmm. So are they mostly invertebrates, or do you also get Paleozoic vertebrates?
Paleozoic is mainly invertebrates. Mm-hmm. So interesting thing is most of the good Paleozoic fossils are from northern eastern Honshu. Mm-hmm. As you saw, it's brachiopods and trilobites and corals, and majority of them are marine organisms. But we do have plant materials, so it's there are extensive forests in Devonian forest and Permian forest in Japan and in the vicinity. But having said that, it's Japan was a part edge of the Asian continent, mm-hmm. so it's obviously we do have no marine terrestrial area and mm-hmm. marine area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So these plant fossils are actually from terrestrial sediments, or are these things that have kind of fallen into less terrestrial, more marine and been preserved, or are these actual terrestrial sediments?
These Permian and some of the Devonian, the plant materials, I think it's come from more terrestrial part of the formations.
And then, of course, moving out of the Paleozoic, there's also quite an extensive bit of Mesozoic fossils, both invertebrate and vertebrate and marine mm-hmm. and terrestrial. Mm-hmm. So can you talk a little bit about this, what we're standing in front of, which is an ichthyosaur called mm-hmm. Utatsosaurus. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a bit about this significance?
Yeah, this is one of the early Triassic ichthyosaurs, and ichthyosaurs appeared in geologic history from the early Triassic, so this is one of the earliest ichthyosaurs, and it's extensively studied by Ryosuke Motani of the mm-hmm. University of California, and he recognized, if you look at typical ichthyosaurs, mm-hmm. its pelvis is already separated from backbones, mm-hmm. but here it's this pelvis of Utatsosaurus is still articulated with vertebral column, so which is has more terrestrial association. And of course, the Utatsosaurus was tipped at swimming ichthyosaurus, but still has sort of remains of terrestrial ancestor.
Mm. Yeah. So how big would this animal have been?
That's the biggest one is 1.5 meter or 2 meters, less than 2 meters.
But it's not actually that big.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess when I think of a lot of ichthyosaurs, mm-hmm. they're often quite a bit larger.
Mm-hmm.
So did they start out smaller and then grow bigger through time?
Yeah, but the interesting thing is, you know, you're originally from Canada, mm-hmm. and you might heard of Shonisaurus mm-hmm. or Shastasaurus from Upper Triassic, and they are gigantic.
Big, aren't they?
And you know, it's there is discussion about how long or how big they were, but you know, any estimates, it's more than 15 meters, 5 meters, and if not 20 meters.
Wow.
And those gigantic ones appeared in Triassic. So they started out as small animals in Triassic, but within Triassic, they achieved gigantism.
I see.
And then I think they changed the mainstream evolution is toward smaller, fast swimming animals,
mm-hmm.
and then Jurassic ones, mm-hmm. as if you know the Holt's Marden or British ichthyosaurs, and those are 2 to 5 meters body length, and it's a fast swimmers.
Interesting.
And yeah, so it's so Triassic. It's obviously it's not only Japan, but there are a lot happening in the evolution of marine reptiles.
So are there other marine reptiles from the Triassic, other ichthyosaurs or anything like that in Japan, or is this kind of the only one?
There are some, but these Utatosaurus is one of the most complete animals. So that's one of the best examples of Triassic fossils, vertebrate fossils from here.
And are the fossils preserved in three dimension, or are they look kind of flattened?
Yeah, it's totally flattened. Okay. So there are many studies how to retro deform the fossils, because obviously if you, I think it's true for every fossils, but these are really compressed. And if you look at ichthyosaurus, it's the vertebral centrum is sort of round and so round shape, and these fossils, obviously, it's squashed. And so you can somehow retro deform the shape, and by looking at the vertebral column, and you can have some information about the retro deformation of other part of the animal too. The skull is obviously compressed.
Yes, that skull looks very squashed.
Yes.
So are there other examples of marine reptiles from other parts of the Mesozoic or from other parts of Japan that are maybe a bit better preserved, or different animals as well?
It's now we can go to the Cretaceous, and Futabasaurus suzukii is Elasmosaurid plesiosaurus, and it's quite a complete animal for Japan. And we are standing in front of the reconstructed skeleton of the Futabasaurus, and these are how the fossil was discovered, and they made a cast of the specimen still in the rocks, and then obviously they had to do a preparation and isolated the bones out of the matrix and studied it and made into the reconstructed skeleton. And this is one of the most complete plesiosaurs from Japan or Asia.
Okay.
But the cervical vertebrae wasn't completely preserved.
Okay.
So this is based on typical Elasmosaurid, but it could be much longer neck or shorter neck. So this particular skeleton is about, body length is estimated about 7 meters in length, but it's could be 9 meters or slightly shorter, say 6 meters.
So Elasmosaurids are known for having a very long neck, right?
Yes.
So with this reconstruction, did you just do it based on something closely related, or just kind of an average of lengths of animals this size, or how did you decide how long you thought it would be?
Yeah, this one is sort of course, we tried to base our estimates on closely related species, and also we didn't assume any extra long neck or extra short neck.
Yeah. So kind of average. So where in Japan was Futabasaurus found?
This is from Fukushima Prefecture. So again, northern Honshu and east side of Japan.
And I can see from the sort of cast of how it was found that it's still in somewhat, you know, it's somewhat articulated and also 3D. Is it common for animals in that area to be found with that sort of preservation?
Yeah, I think it's Utatosaurus, the Triassic ichthyosaurus, was badly crushed.
Yeah.
So this is more typical of Japanese vertebrate fossils.
Okay. So they're actually, in general, quite well preserved compared mm-hmm. to the Utatsosaurus that we mm-hmm. just saw. And I can see that this one has a skull. Mm-hmm. I think skulls are not all that common with plesiosaurs, are they?
Right, because plesiosaurs tend to have long neck.
Yes.
And it's flexible long necks, and obviously the head, skull, is quite flexible mm-hmm. in terms of movement. So, you know, when it's fossilized, it's usually disarticulated.
Mm-hmm.
And so that you, as you know, there are many headless
yes.
or neckless plesiosaurs. Yeah.
Mm.
So this particular fossil was found in 1968 mm-hmm. by high school student. And so this young man been prospecting for fossils in his hometown area
mm-hmm.
in Fukushima in northern Honshu. And there was a river cap outcrop, and he recognized some of the vertebrae
that
was eroded to the face of this outcrop.
Mm-hmm.
And then he invited scientists from this museum, National Museum of Nature and Science, and they started extensive search
mm-hmm.
of the outcrop. And they found the skull. And already at that stage, the posterior part, brain case, was gone due to the erosion by the river.
Okay.
But they have quite nice snout.
Yeah.
And, the orbit and snout part, but we don't have the brain case and most of the neck.
Yeah.
Yeah. Terribly sorry, such a noise, because we are here on Monday, and Monday the museum is closed to the public on Mondays. But then I thought it's quiet to talk to you, and we have our entire gallery to ourselves. But at the same time, there are many maintenance work is being carried out. I'm terribly sorry about that.
That's okay.
We had an Ivo Divo
mm-hmm.
Exhibition
mm-hmm.
until yesterday, and they are deinstalling the mm-hmm. exhibition and clean up the special exhibition rooms.
And I think that's just below us, isn't
below
it?
Below us,
yeah.
yes. And also we had a National Natural History Museum London exhibition.
Yes.
It was quite a spectacular, popular
yes.
exhibition. That's also ended yesterday.
Yes.
So it's a lot of work is going
uh-huh.
on. Yes.
We got to witness the packing up of Archaeopteryx this
yeah,
morning.
Yeah,
first
yeah.
time it's traveled,
mm-hmm.
so that was exciting.
Mm-hmm. So it's we had a exhibition on with that Natural History Museum London exhibition. We introduced Mary Anning, of course, and some of the specimens she collected.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have plesiosaurs on display, but as we all know, she was the one who found the first complete ichthyosaurus
mm-hmm.
and plesiosaurus.
Yes.
So Japanese Mary Anning was a high school boy.
So was that the first plesiosaur that was found in Japan?
No, it wasn't the first, but
okay.
the first complete.
The first,
ones.
Okay.
Before that, there was a paper written about isolated specimens.
Okay.
And so we knew ichthyosaurus and plesiosaurus existed
yeah.
In Japan, but this was the first complete one.
Mm.
And so this is one of the best known
mm-hmm.
Vertebrate fossils
mm-hmm.
from Japan.
Okay. So if we move back towards the other Mesozoic fossils, because it's not just marine fossils,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
So
we do have dinosaurs and other plants, and of
mm-hmm.
course, but the dinosaurs, we have quite a variety of fossils. And as if you follow dinosaurs, Fukuisaurus and Fukui Raptor,
mm-hmm.
Fukui Venator,
mm-hmm.
Koshisaurus, and Tamba titanus and Koshi saurus, and so there are quite a few named dinosaur specimens. And again, it's mainly from western part of Japan, which is more inland of Japan, and they're quite terrestrial area, and then also plant fossils too.
So the dinosaur fossils, are they also Cretaceous, like the Futabasaurus, or are they kind of a variety of ages?
It's everything reported up to today is the dinosaurs from Japan are mainly Cretaceous, all Cretaceous actually, and the majority of them named species early Cretaceous, but now it's there are some new fossils being excavated from Hokkaido and the Upper Cretaceous.
I think just a couple of weeks ago there was something in the paper or something in the news about a new dinosaur being found on Hokkaido.
Yes, exactly. That's Hadrosaurid dinosaur.
Ah, okay.
And again, many of the Japanese dinosaurs are fragmentary, and but this Hadrosaurid from Hokkaido, it's, Yoshitsugu Kobayashi is a leading scientist for this project, but he says it's about 70 or 80% complete.
Oh, wow.
So they have a skull and, you know, four legs and the tail. So
wow.
Spectacular specimen.
Yeah,
so,
that's exciting.
Yeah.
How long would something like that take to excavate here?
It takes long because the sediments, the rocks, much harder it's more difficult to prepare.
Okay.
And I think it's mainly because of the, it's more heavy tectonic influence on the rocks here in comparison to, say, Mongolia or Canada or Western US. So the rocks are harder. So that is the problem. It's we that's have a hard time to preparing the fossil out from the matrix.
How does the sort of fossil collecting law work here? Like, if somebody finds something, do they have to report it, or is it like in the US where if they find it they can keep it if it's on their land, or how does it kind of work?
I think if it's in your own land, then you have a right to keep it. And we don't have any particular international laws preventing you from selling it to overseas or bringing it out to overseas. But many of the area is protected by some of the laws. And so before even go and dig something out, you have to apply for the permission.
Permits.
And from depends on where you are and the site, but you have to submit your proposal or permission application to the Board of Education or village or town.
Okay.
And usually they have a consulting scientist, and so it's our local museums, and they review your application or proposal and decide if it's okay to do a prospecting and digging. We talked about big dinosaurs and plesiosaurs, and maybe Japan is famous for ammonites. And ammonites are from not everywhere, but famous, many famous sites from Hokkaido and Honshu and southern islands of Japan too. But those abnormally uncoiled ammonites are famous for Japan. Of course, there are from North America too, but Japan has peculiar ammonites.
Yeah, I think I had seen pictures of kind of uncoiled or strangely shaped ammonites mm-hmm. before, but I've never seen as many as what I'm looking at right now, and as many different shapes.
Yeah.
So are these Cretaceous as well?
Yes, many Cretaceous. There are Triassic and Jurassic ammonites, but the Cretaceous ammonites are spectacular.
So is there any particular reason why these morphologies of ammonites are really common in Japan rather than in other places?
Good question. I don't know.
It's just thinking about it.
Start to evolve towards the end of Cretaceous. Okay. So obviously, you know, so you don't see them in Jurassic or mm-hmm. earlier sediments.
So you won't see them in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
But
if you have a good late Cretaceous exposure, and you have more chance.
Okay.
Yeah. My favorite is I know very little about invertebrate paleontology. It's quite. I shouldn't say this, but to be honest, this is a type of oyster, and it's a Combostrea is genetic name, and this is again from Upper Cretaceous of Northern Honshu and Hokkaido.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? There are many oysters and today, and you go and you've looked at oysters and oyster bars and mm-hmm. restaurants, but this one is quite elongated, and
yes.
some of them is like nearly 1 meter in length, and it's strangely shaped elongated oysters, and it's from what I understand is the sedimentation is so fast, and in those areas, some of these oysters adapted to grow and elongate the shells. It's amazing.
Yeah, they look very different from any oyster I've ever seen. Are these kind of oysters, you might not know this, but are they found elsewhere, or is this something that's only in Japan from what you know?
I only know it's quite rare, so
okay.
that you know, Japan is famous for that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know how much fossils being reported from outside of Japan.
And I now see right underneath it is the first dinosaur discovered in Japan.
Yes, that was a humerus, a fragmentary humerus of sauropod dinosaurs. That was in 1978.
Okay.
And the invertebrate paleontologist was doing field work in northern Honshu.
Mm-hmm.
And he was there looking at early Cretaceous rocks. And they're staying at the inn and bed and breakfast
mm-hmm.
in the area. And one morning they're just, you know, looking at outside of the window and a view of the cliff in front of the bed and breakfast, and they recognize some wood-shaped chunk is sitting in the in the formation, and they recognize. So they first thought it's a wood,
yeah,
but it turned out to be bones, and this invertebrate paleontologist telephoned paleontologist back in Tokyo and asked for instructions. And this is a remote area, so they didn't have a particular, you know, specialist glue or something.
Yeah.
So they went outside, went to a stationery store nearby and
oh, no.
bought a bunch of ordinary glue. And they diluted it into the water
and made it
more liquid glue and applied it all over the bones and lifted from the outcrop.
So 1978, so not that long ago for the first dinosaur fossil.
No, and I think we didn't expect to have big vertebrate fossils from Japan, and especially Mesozoic ones.
Mm-hmm.
So people didn't expect. So they didn't spend enough time and made an effort to find it. But after this sauropod was reported, then people started to pay attention.
Mm.
And so now it's, we have dinosaur fossils from Hokkaido to Kyushu,
mm-hmm.
and not every, you know, prefecture, but mm-hmm. More than 19 prefectures.
Wow.
And so it's quite good. And it's, as you mentioned, it's there was a report of new hadrosaurid from Hokkaido, and it's very complete ones.
So still being found, you know, mm-hmm. frequently.
Yeah,
Not a
so
rare.
So it's getting there, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
that's exciting.
Yeah, just a week ago, it's the eggshell fossils. From Western Honshu,
mm-hmm.
and that was sort of, you know, it's sitting in somebody's house for nearly 40 years.
Wow.
And then it's most likely a dinosaur
mm-hmm.
eggs and eggshells.
Wow.
So the eggshells was probably found much earlier than this sauropod.
Yeah.
So if you look back at maybe there are more.
Yeah.
You know, it's a hidden specimens.
Yeah. Well, I guess now we can move to the Cenozoic.
Yes.
Because there's also fossils from the Cenozoic.
Yeah.
It's got all major time except not Precambrian, I guess,
mm-hmm.
but.
I guess so, yeah. Huh. Yeah. So, about 20 to 15, 15 million years ago,
mm-hmm.
that the Sea of Japan was formed.
Mm-hmm.
So, Japan became the archipelago,
mm-hmm.
so separated from the continent. So, before that, in Mesozoic and Paleozoic, Japan was a part of the continent,
mm-hmm.
and now after Miocene, it's Japan became the continent. So that's made a big difference.
Mm. So there's obviously, I'm looking at a lot of very nicely preserved plant fossils. So you've got plant fossils, you have some mammal fossils
mm-hmm.
as well.
Mm-hmm.
I see also marine. So you've got all the different kind of realms of Cenozoic fossils as well.
Yeah, if you're a vertebrate paleontologist, probably you've heard of Desmostylians
mm.
and the Paleoparadoxia, those aquatic mammals. It's only found, their fossils are only found in Japan or North America.
Mm.
And it's looks like hippopotamus or something.
Yeah.
It's a quadrupedal marine mammals, but it's the teeth are quite unique in shape, and it's as if those tabular shape units are formed into a tooth, into a molar, and so that type of teeth is quite identifiable, and so. The animal is so different from what you see today. And so it's obviously they became extinct without leaving any descendants today.
So those teeth are like kind of single cylinders of tooth put together to make almost one continuous
mm-hmm.
long tooth.
Mm-hmm.
That's really interesting. I've don't know very much about mammal paleontology, I will admit. and I hadn't realized that before. That's really weird.
Yeah. And there are, of course, it's they are quite diverse
mm-hmm.
in biodiversity-wise and species diversity-wise. And so they're quite different. And some scientists argue some Desmostylians use these teeth for grinding soft plants
mm-hmm.
Material under the water, and some some species use more suction feeding type of things. So it's they're quite strange looking.
Yes, yeah, they are. So how long have these been known in Japan for? When were these first kind of discovered?
I think it's, I don't remember offhand, but it's been reported for many years.
Before dinosaurs?
Before dinosaurs, yeah. Obviously, and yeah. They're quite strange.
Mm. It also, I mean, looking at this one skeleton, mm-hmm. It looks quite complete. So, you know, most of the animal is known as well. So that's kind of nice to see a mm-hmm. whole skeleton. And
yeah, it's even these, we were just talking about teeth. Its mm-hmm. teeth are quite different, but there are big debates, and there are many studies how they walked or paddled, how they used their limbs, and how they held their body, and there were many discussions.
Mm.
And, so if you know, go into the web or a textbook, there are a series of different reconstructions.
Mm. Mm. Is there a kind of consensus today, or a main thought of how they did it?
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
It's interesting. Ah.
And there are ice age, and
yes.
And those time it's sea level was mm-hmm. low, so Japan was reconnected with the rest of the continent, and there are, on those days, there are elephants from the Asian continent moved into Japan from the south, walked to Japan from the south, and also some woolly mammoths coming from the north to Japan. And so there are southern migration and northern migration. And it's again, you know, that you know woolly mammoths and things like that from Siberia,
mm-hmm.
and some relative things from North America, but you know, you'd assume Japan has been island, and then you don't, you know, if you didn't know about it, you don't expect to see the elephant fossils from Japan, but they're quite diverse ones, and from Japan, and also other, like, deer and other mammals are found in Japan. And also it's if you look at the cave deposit, it's small mammals.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and bats and things like that.
How old are these kind of cave type deposits?
It can be quite old, but the youngest one is obviously 20,000 years.
Okay. Ago. Still not that young, though.
Mm-hmm. And there are some of them much older. And there is the recent project here at the museum is when and how people came to Japan.
Mm.
And there are hypotheses. It's from China and Taiwan. It's they used some kind of boats and across the water, the sea,
mm-hmm.
and came to Japan. And probably island hopping from Okinawa Islands to mm-hmm. Kyushu. And,
So these kind of cave deposits are found all over the country as well?
I think it's mainly from Okinawa and those islands.
Okay.
And it's because there are limestone islands, and there's a fissure and a cave, and those breakage as a space between the limestone, and then the newer sediments fell in
mm-hmm.
to those gap.
Mm. That's very interesting. Mm-hmm. So obviously we're talking today because last week you were at the annual kind of Japanese paleontology meeting.
Yes.
So how many paleontologists are there in Japan?
Maybe professional ones, mm-hmm. like those who are working at the university and museums, maybe somewhere around 200, 300,
okay.
something like that.
Yeah.
And there are more students mm-hmm. and then amateur paleontologists. And the Paleontological Society of Japan has more than 1,000 memberships.
Wow.
So I know the exact number because I sat in the meeting. It's a General Assembly just a few days ago. It's 1,008 members. And
wow.
In addition to that, we have a sort of friends of the Paleontological Society. That's, mm-hmm. I should say friends of paleontology. It's about 300
okay.
People. And that's it's children and quite old and mm-hmm. retired people. And mm-hmm. it's a mixture. But I was quite impressed with younger ones mm-hmm. because I sat next to second grade boys just yesterday, and they are the members of the Friends of the Paleontology, mm-hmm. and they can go and listen to the scientific technical sessions.
Wow.
And this 7 years old boy sat through the entire morning session,
wow.
and taking notes, I ran into another 7 years old boy. It's and he was listened to silicons, the biology of silicons and fossil record, and it was a public talk. But he sat through 1 hour lecture and took note and maybe 5 pages in notes, and
wow.
at the end he asked a question and said, "So how many silicons that's known to science?" And
wow.
I didn't know that, and it seems like 140 species, and it's amazing, you know.
Yeah.
There are only two species today.
Yes.
But you know, if you include all the named species, that's it's more than 100, you know. And so, and this speaker, Dr. Yamamoto from Kitakyushu Museum, didn't mention that in his lecture. And
yeah.
He had the phylogeny and stratocladogram,
mm-hmm.
and he mentioned many names, of course, but the boy just mm-hmm. not and how many.
He wanted
species.
To know how many.
That was a really good question. So, so I don't know. It's how many people in British or Canadian societies? Do you know?
So in the Canadian Society of Vertebrate Paleo, which is very new, mm-hmm. Their annual meetings have maybe 40 people,
mm-hmm.
but it's only been going now three
mm-hmm.
or 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
The British one is more. I don't know how many members, but the meeting would be similar, maybe
mm-hmm.
like 300
mm-hmm.
people kind of thing. I know SVPCA, which is Vertebrate Paleo and Comparative
mm-hmm.
Anatomy, has
mm-hmm.
typically maybe 120 or 150 people at it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, yeah, I think of there being a very large British paleontology community,
mm-hmm.
but it seems like Japan has a much bigger one.
Yeah, it's, the society was 1,008 members, covering the entire paleontology,
mm-hmm.
so not only vertebrate,
yeah.
Paleobotany and invertebrate
mm-hmm.
and micro paleontologists. So it's entirely paleontology, and there are many suggestions. Maybe that they should make a Vertebrate Paleontology Society
mm-hmm.
of Japan,
mm-hmm.
and we talked about it, and maybe 200, 300 membership, and or maybe it could be more.
Yeah.
But it's still not enough members. Mm. So that's we decided to work as entire paleontology group. Because I don't know, it's the situation surrounding paleontology in Canada or UK. Mm. I lived in UK for 4 years, mm-hmm. and in the US 4 years, and I did the junior year abroad in Canada, mm-hmm. Saskatchewan, University of Saskatchewan, long time ago. It's you know, paleontology is so popular here because dinosaurs and barge shale and trilobites and ammonites, they're so popular. So there are many people that's interested in paleontology in this country. So whenever we have exhibitions, special exhibitions, the dinosaur exhibitions, mm-hmm. or diversity of life, introducing barge shale, mm-hmm. and change on fauna, and et cetera, et cetera. We attract many people.
Mm.
But the number of students taking geology at high school has decreased.
Oh, okay.
And maybe because of that, that the number of people pursuing, studying geology, paleontology in undergraduates much less.
Decreased.
So in for the future of paleontology in Japan, we need to encourage more people go to study paleontology in university level.
Mm.
So that's, I don't know, it's is a similar situation, do you think, in UK? Canada?
Not in the UK. In the UK, they have problems with too many people doing, maybe not undergrad, but mm-hmm. doing graduate studies. Mm-hmm. And so there's so many people who want to do a master's or a PhD, mm-hmm. and there are so few jobs that mm-hmm. it's very problematic. Mm-hmm. So I would imagine undergrad would be similar. It mm-hmm. seems like a lot of people really want to study it.
Mm-hmm.
In Canada, I know that geology has decreased a little bit since the price of oil went down.
Right.
So there used to be a lot of people who would go into geology to mm-hmm. get a job with an oil company, mm-hmm. but that some universities have had major problems bringing students in mm-hmm. Since the oil price has decreased.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how that's affected paleontology, though, because mm-hmm. so where I did my undergrad in Alberta, I actually did my BSc in paleontology.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't geology and it wasn't biology, it was actually paleontology. Nice. So nice. I don't know how those numbers will have changed,
mm-hmm.
but I know that kind of general geology has gone
mm-hmm.
down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's I didn't mention the most the important issue just you raised a moment ago. It's the university here is making an effort to strengthen the postgraduate, so graduate schools.
Yes.
And I think we attracted enough number of students coming to paleontology, but the jobs are quite limited. And
yes.
So obviously, there are many universities in Japan and there are many museums, but job opportunities are not increasing.
Yes.
So it's a big gap.
Yes.
There's a number of graduate students, you know, graduating from paleontology, and less postdoc opportunities,
mm-hmm.
and much, much less
yes.
job opportunities. So we have to change that.
Yes.
Yeah. We paleontologists tend to say, oh, we are so popular, so it's we need to create more jobs.
Yes.
But it's not easy.
No.
For obvious reasons.
But, so how many universities are there that you could study paleontology if you wanted to in Japan?
That's a good question, but maybe 50,
okay.
That's including, you know, everything, yes. Invertebrate,
yeah.
You know, invertebrate, mm-hmm. Micropaleontology. there are quite a few.
Yeah.
But again, that's, I was talking to many university professors at a conference yesterday, the mm-hmm. day before yesterday. It's... the population is decreasing in Japan, so it's university has hard time to securing enough number of good students, and the government is trying to encourage some universities focus on more in education than research, mm-hmm. and so that changes the environment for the universities. In the older days, you know, it's there are many top research universities and more smaller universities and or universities for training students to become high school, primary school teachers.
Mm-hmm.
But even those departments, they're keen to do research, and that's been working. Now the government is giving pressure that you should, you know, your university or department should focus more on education.
Mm.
So less priority for researchers.
Yes.
So, mm-hmm.
Well, that's really interesting. Thank you very much, Makoto. I have learned a lot about Japanese paleontology, and hopefully this will get people interested in paleo in Japan. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
PaleoCast was brought to you by Dave Marshall, with Joe Keating, Laura Soule, Liz Martin-Silverstone and Caitlin Coleri. It was made possible by funding from the Paleontological Society and the Paleontological Association, but the show now relies on contributions from you, the listeners. If you've liked this episode, please consider donating, and thanks to everyone that's helped out so far. We'd also like to thank the Ocean Collective for use of their music. Please visit paleocast.com for the supplementary material to this episode and for our archive of past programmes. Subscribe to our Twitter feed at @paleocast and like us at facebook.com/paleocast to get all the latest news.